The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.
Hello, and welcome to That's Life, Spectator Life's sideways look at the world today. I'm Benedict Spence.
And I'm Andy Shaw.
And on this podcast, we'll be poking fun at the people, words, and ideas that have popped up in the news over the last few weeks. Now, after the last few weeks, which has been spent under house arrest, it finally looks as though there's an end in sight. The Great Escape is finally on. But there's a problem. Some of us have become a bit too used to the confines of our own cells, only seeing daylight for an hour in every 24 and hanging around in baggy fatigues. We've become acclimatised, institutionalised, and frankly we're unsure if we can cope on the outside. But as we emerge, mole-like from our abodes, blinking into the light, it might be wise to hop in the car and test out our eyesights. A nice trip to your nearest market town ought to do the trick. Our guest for this episode is outspoken drag queen Vanity Von Glow. Vanity has spent a decade at the top as a cabaret tour de force, and as one of the UK's most in-demand drag queen stars. A singer, pianist, and comic, she also hosts a new political talk show, The Vanity Project, at the H Club in central London. Vanity, it's a pleasure to have you with us. How's lockdown been treating you?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm coming to you from Whitechapel, which has been an interesting place to spend lockdown here in London because it's a real artery, Whitechapel High Street. So you wouldn't really know by this stage that there had been a lockdown at all because there's so much racket from the city and the traffic. We had very quiet first 2 weeks, but now it really does feel like noise-wise it's all over, which is quite encouraging because it does make me feel like life is perhaps very slowly going back to normal.
Well, that's good. And of course, we're joined by co-host Andy. Andy, how are you getting on in lockdown? Are you still reasonably sane?
Well, I'm a bit disappointed that Boris has now given us permission to go and see our parents who live in different houses because I wanted to do it illegally. We'd already made the arrangements and then he said it was all right. So I feel a bit let down now.
He's stolen all the fun out of your life.
He has, yeah.
I mean, what's a distinctly Tory thing to do, frankly, to just suck the joy out of even the lockdown.
Typical.
Well, on the subject of Tories sucking the joy out of everybody, Vanity, the nation has been consumed in the last few days by one person and one person alone. And that is, of course, a certain Dominic Cummings. What's your take on this pretty mad situation?
It's interesting. The other day, I found myself taking a walk down memory lane and watching a Russell Brand stand-up concert from way back in like 2008. And if you remember, he was amidst a scandal then for phoning and leaving a voicemail on the answering machine of Andrew Sachs, the actor from Fawlty Towers. And there was just this crazy media storm around Russell Brand for that, you know, admittedly ill-judged gaffe to phone up an old man and taunt him for laughs on the radio. But it kind of has the same flavour as that. I understand that people are obviously, there is an element of life and death in some of this because we're dealing with a pandemic. But it is the same kind of media furore and dog with a bone style reporting that's going on with Dominic Cummings that happened back then. And I can't help but feel like it is kind of trivial. And I am astonished at the criticism of the media. You're criticising Dominic Cummings for failing to comply with social distancing measures as they see it, whilst themselves being packed in a throng outside his home, climbing over each other physically to ask him questions. It's just the lack of self-awareness to be criticising someone for something and then doing that very thing yourself. It's been astonishing.
I remember hearing that interview, actually, at the time with Russell Brand. I think it was with Ricky Gervais, who did like a bit of a double act. If I remember right, it was on Radio 2.
Jonathan Ross,
it wasn't Ricky Gervais, that's right. But anyway, he pretty quickly resigned, didn't he?
Yes.
Big Ferrari, and he resigned and thought, actually, you know, I can just go off and do something else and do my own thing.
He disappeared off to Hollywood and did some movies. I wonder if Dominic Cummings might do likewise.
Well, I've got a better suggestion. I think there's a really good way out of this. I think Dominic Cummings should resign. I think Emily Maitlis should keep her job for the sort of little propaganda rant that she gave on Newsnight the other night. but Dominic Cummings should be made chairman of the BBC. I think that sorts everybody out.
I like this idea of Dominic Cummings potentially also going off to Hollywood, though, because in a Hollywood movie, I suppose he would make quite a good sort of evil villain at the head of a giant media corporation, sort of spinning incessantly. I could see that taking off as a theme. What do you think?
I think he's quite curmudgeonly, isn't he? I think it's partly why it's easy to dislike him. Yes, I could certainly see him playing certain types of roles in Hollywood that were reserved for your sort of dry old Brits. People like Peter Cushing, the role of Grand Moff Tarkin in Star Wars, because the Americans like the idea of a really dry British nemesis represented in cinema. So yes, maybe that's his next thing. Good luck to him.
He's not really got the dress sense, though, for one of those sort of evil supervillains, though. That's the other thing that tends to go with British supervillains, is that they're always very pristinely presented, whereas Dominic Cummings, well, I suppose he does literally look like the rest of us during lockdown, like we've just rolled out of bed and, to be honest, we've not put our face on. I mean, Andy, how do you think Dominic Cummings has come off during this whole furore? I mean, you know, it's really grabbed the nation's attention in a much larger way than I expected it would.
I've got a couple of theories on it. I think the government panicked, sent everybody into lockdown, and now has absolutely no idea how to prise people out of their homes. They thought, what are we going to do? We need people to actually start thinking for themselves again, break a few rules and, you know, use their own judgment. And Dominic Cummings, I think, was in this corner in the meeting, slumped in the corner, and he just looked at everyone and gave them a little wink. So they sent Cummings out there to just, like, rip it all apart. And they leaked it to the press themselves because they couldn't issue government instructions. They just needed someone to break the rules, and Cummings was the man. That's my theory.
Vanity, aside from Dominic Cummings, who, you know, has taken up as much time as I think is possibly needs to be taken up, has there been anything else that's really sort of stood out for you over the last couple of weeks as sort of capturing the zeitgeist of the moment?
Yes, there was a brilliant moment. I think the park is in Toronto where this happened. I don't know if you've seen this video on the internet of a young student-aged girl who's out in the park and she's being interviewed by a journalist who's asking what her thoughts are on the necessity of mask wearing for public safety. And as she's talking to the journalist, a young man comes up and snogs her right there and then, and it's a surprise kiss. She doesn't know the man. And then off he disappears. Obviously, that's a risky tactic if you're hitting on someone. But she was delighted. She laughs and says he's gorgeous. And then they end up exchanging numbers. And it's just this strange little moment to have been caught. It's sort of a cheeky Irish chap, the young man. So he was obviously doing it a bit to amuse himself for the camera's sake. But that sort of spontaneity and taking a little chance, especially in these times, it's kind of romantic. And I think that some of those little romantic moments have been forgotten against the backdrop of this very serious pandemic that we're all having to live through. So that moment for me was kind of magical and a little symbol of hope.
I thought it was beautiful. I thought it really went against a couple of things. One is the spontaneity, and all of our human interactions are now sort of determined by a rule book of how far away we stay from each other. You know, how do you express affection? How do you flirt in this sort of COVID environment? But also the taking a risk in a flirtation is also risky because it can be seen as, you know, abusive, or he hasn't asked permission to kiss this woman he just met. It was just the risk of the flirtation and the risk of rejection, actually, from his point of view, because it would have been broadcast to the nation that he'd made his move and she'd have just, like, slapped him or brushed him off or rugby tackled him to the ground or accused him of some form of assault. Just that sort of spontaneous risk taking, because, you know, he really desired her. And what was lovely about it is that she really appreciated it. You know, it was lovely to be desired and for all of that to be caught on camera. So I thought it was beautiful.
And we love a good risk, and you just know they'll be having condomless sex as well, so that's nice for them.
I suppose that's what Dominic Cummings should have led with, really. We all love a bit of risk. If I just snogged a member of the public, none of you would be bothered. This is completely mad.
Well, maybe we're going to have a bit of a bounce back on this. People have been so socially distanced and restricted, a bit like a bounce back after a bad relationship. Maybe we're going to, you know, find ourselves spontaneously kissing women on the checkout and just hugging people we barely know. Of course, nobody over 70 for good health reasons.
I just suddenly had in my mind my local supermarket and, you know, wondering about whether or not I'd get away with wanting to kiss men on the checkout or people on the checkout. I'm just not really sure I'd get away with it. If I'm not here for the next podcast, you know what's happened. I've taken Andy's advice and I am in prison. Apart from people breaking lockdown rules and spontaneous acts of affection, Andy, has anything sort of stood out for you? I mean, those two things are enough to be getting on with in life, I suppose, but anything else happened that's really grabbed your attention?
I suppose it's more of a non-event than an event, is the sort of non-opening of a lot of schools, or rather the partial opening of some classrooms for some groups of kids. Which I think is really quite funny. You know, I know parents have been setting up petitions and some teachers have been saying that they don't want to go into the school because it's not safe. Whole councils have been refusing to let schools open. We've had the schools shut down for the last 2.5 months now. We have all the experience of, I think it's 21, 22 countries in Europe have opened not only their schools, but also their pubs, their restaurants and what have you. And yet we've got a group of people who are saying that one of the safest places in any country is now an unsafe place. And I'd love them to maybe do a sort of job swap for a day with a roofer, maybe, or a scaffolder, or an oil rig diver to sort of get some appreciation of what an unsafe job is really like. So that's been my sort of event of the last couple of weeks. One other thing that's really struck me is that there have been calls for teachers to get therapeutic support so that they can provide therapeutic support to the pupils who've gone through a traumatic experience. And Rebecca Long Bailey is now just demanding a national support programme to support these teachers. It's just becoming more and more surreal. It's like, well, we'll open the schools, but we'll open them not as schools to teach kids, you know, stoicism, bravery, maths and English or whatever, but to sort of turn it into one big sort of therapeutic unit where teachers become therapists and pupils are going to effectively be patients. I think we're losing the plot on this one.
I think a lot of my former teachers would agree with you there, Andy. I think therapy is probably needed for a lot of the nature's teachers.
You know, over this summer, for example, I think there's going to be a lot more conscious and deliberate going to parks and having barbecues. And also because everyone's not been able to get together and hook up and flirt and all that, there's potentially an explosion of a kind of hippie vibe. I think people are going to be, you know, smoking weed in the park. They're not going to be picking up lovers in nightclubs in the same way. So that I think that's going to happen in parks. I wonder if in the schools, they're all going to sort of do the therapy culture thing. And perhaps the teachers should all learn to sing Kumbaya, which would be in keeping with that kind of nice hippie 60s model. Because that's what I'm looking forward to over the summer.
Or maybe the kids are going to be more like the punk response to the hippiedom. So all the teachers become all sort of, you know, therapeutic and what have you. And actually all the kids are just thinking, like, what's the matter with this lot? You know, and just like shake it all up.
Well, we've got two words there, punk and hippiedom, but Vanity, as our 7 regular listeners to this podcast will be able to tell you, we've been compiling a bit of a dictionary of era-defining words here at That's Life. And we like to ask our guests if they could come up with something to add to that, something that they think is a particularly interesting or spiky word. So I suppose I was just wondering if you had one term, other than punk or hippie, I suppose, that you would like to add to that dictionary, perhaps. Explain to us why you think it's such an interesting topic.
Well, there's a word that I've had enough of, and I think that sometimes that deserves to go in there, which is the word unprecedented. This is a word that has been used to an unprecedented degree during these unprecedented times. In every shop window, there's a sign saying that they're closed until further notice due to the unprecedented coronavirus. People put up posts on Facebook that take on a tone of public relations as though they, you know, Jonathan sat in his computer, is making some sort of public statement as if he was a multinational company referring to these unprecedented times. And it kind of reminds me that there is a script to which everyone is sticking. When you hear a word so much, or there's a certain phrase that is so prevalent over a certain period, it's slightly eerie to me. It always puts me off. It puts me a little on edge. And so it's a word I'd like to, frankly, not hear again, for one, the reason that I think we've got better imagination than that, but it does make me think of a slightly mindless going along with groupthink. So for me, that's the one.
The use of the word is unprecedented, isn't it? It's really odd how there's a real sense of people wanting to be part of history without actually doing anything historically interesting. So it's sort of, you know, this is unprecedented. I was here in these unprecedented times. Or what did you do? I told everyone how unprecedented and historical it was. And I was here. I was present. I've taken photographs or I've interviewed people or I was actually here. And of course, things that are historic and are unprecedented are only really understood to be so retrospectively, when we have a sense of perspective and we look back on it and we assess it. And actually, it's people in the future who decide whether something's historic. You can't decide yourself. It's almost like a performative sort of history creation. And everyone has a sort of memory of it, thinks they're going to tell their grandkids. And then when the grandkids are going to turn around and go, well, what do you actually do? They're going to say, well, I took photos of myself saying how historical and unprecedented it was. It's not going to be very impressive, is it?
Andy, I wonder if you agree with me here. I do have this slight suspicion. I'm aware this is a cynical or sceptical view, but I do think that for some people, this might be the most interesting thing that's ever happened to them.
Okay, maybe.
What comes from that is a slight thirst for participation and a sort of towing the party line for that reason, because it feels quite purposeful. And I think that perhaps some people have been lacking a sense of purpose, so this gives them all something to get on board with.
And I am slightly sympathetic to it in that we had the last NHS clap on our street and pretty much all the neighbours have come out. And it has been quite nice. I have sort of felt a bit daft to like a clapping seal, and I'm not quite sure, you know, what's going on, because I think I mentioned it on the last podcast, but and in fact, I checked with my daughter who works at local hospital last night. I said, how many COVID patients are there in the hospital? She said 79. It's not quite as catastrophic as people are making out. So it does feel a bit odd. But a couple of the neighbours came over and said, oh, we should carry it on. You know, this has been really nice. This has been really nice coming out. I really sense that they like the community feel. We fobbed them off by saying we're going to have a big street barbecue. You know, for some people, this has been really nice. And actually, you know, spending more time with the family and not commuting and stuff has been lovely for some people.
Certainly it would have made history throughout all of previous history a lot less interesting if all the chroniclers had just written down, this was unprecedented. You know, there wouldn't actually be very much to the history of mankind if that was the only observation. But Andy, now that we've had the unprecedented move of removing the word unprecedented from my dictionary, you're going to have to fill up that slot. Is there another word that is particularly of interest to you at the moment?
Yeah, I can't decide really. I quite like the term exit phobia. I don't know if I've just invented it.
Isn't there a syndrome for that, where you don't want to go outside? Isn't that a thing?
A phobia as in, you know, an irrational fear or something. I mean, we've had lots and lots of phobias around the sort of social justice stuff.
Yeah.
I think there is an irrational fear now of going outside, that it's almost like the jailer has said, you know, I've put the keys in the door, the door's open, you can go out now. God, look how lovely and sunny it is out there. Off you go. And people are saying, well, how do I do that? Can you tell me who I can see? And can I go in the house? Can I meet them in the garden? And if I want a pee, can I go to their toilet? And can I just have a pee, or can I have a number two as well? Or it's almost like people need a bit of an instruction manual to do it. So I think there is a sort of fear of venturing out into the unknown again. Anyway, hopefully we can overcome the phobia and get on with it.
I mean, is it that irrational a phobia, given that we're now told that there are government aides driving around with poor eyesight at however many miles an hour, just on a whim? Surely it would be fairly rational thing to want to avoid walking out into the streets. I mean, can you perhaps understand why everybody is a little reluctant to go back out into the wide world, Andy?
No.
Vanity, are you enjoying it? Are you looking forward to going back outside and, you know, having to deal with talking to people face to face again?
I've been with my partner in Whitechapel because I live with an older woman in Clapham, and so originally I was shielding her when I had COVID symptoms at the start, just before lockdown. Now, going back to Clapham is not a long journey. It's less than an hour, and it's obviously lovely weather, so it's nice to go out and cycle. But something has happened in these past 2 months where it feels like an insurmountable journey. Because I've not been making many journeys, you know, you go to the shops and to the park, but I do think that the radius of one's territory shrinks somewhat when you've been in confinement. I think of how my cat used to go to the bottom of our cul-de-sac, but no further when I was growing up. And I feel like the territory in which I feel safe or enthused to roam in feels a little shrunk.
True. There is a whole world out there to explore once again.
Yes.
Vanity, just to end off on, we also like to discuss, as well as the ideas and the words and the events, we also like to be scurrilous gossips and discuss people. Now, I understand there's only one person that anybody's been really talking about in the last few days and weeks, but I was just wondering, has there been any other individual who's sort of stood out for you as being particularly noteworthy, apart from the revered and hated Mr. Cummings?
Yes, absolutely. Now, I don't know how well the readers of The Spectator will be well acquainted with Lana Del Rey, who is one of the biggest pop stars.
It's a very discerning audience. I'm sure one of them will have.
Yes, at least one of them. So Lana Del Rey is in trouble with her own fandom after posting an Instagram post, which was a lengthy comment on her art as a fragile woman and how her work sort of documents a fragile kind of femininity and is somewhat different from feminism that we, inverted commas feminism, that we see in other music. But because she listed a few artists like Doja Cat and I think Nicki Minaj, or who are people of colour, her fans have taken her comments as a sort of racial microaggression against those other singers. So you can go and follow this up yourself if you're interested. But the reason that she's my person is she more or less told them that they were all talking a load of nonsense. And the phrase that she used, which I liked, was that she felt like people were trying to turn her comments on fragility into a race war. And frankly, she has no time for it, and defended herself, not in a pantomime fashion, but in quite a fair and reasonable fashion. And I actually think it's quite important that these big cultural figures within music that a lot of young people are listening to, I think it's one, good that she has a different voice from a lot of the artists out there, and two, that she stands her ground when people try to attach a sort of nonsense narrative to her comments about her own artwork.
I mean, she's described herself as not a feminist before now, hasn't she? But also she, you know, believes in female empowerment and the like. The thing that struck me about it is that any artist is trying to tell their own story or explain things from their own point of view or give people a different perspective. And what's great about that, particularly when it's a song, because songs are emotionally touchy, music really touches you, is that you're expressing your fragility and your vulnerability and your emotions. And either people relate to that, somebody else is expressing something that they feel themselves, or if you don't feel that yourself, you're understanding how somebody else is feeling. And that's what makes us really human. So to express that and criticize other people for not doing that and then being attacked and accused of being a racist for doing it is not only just missing the point, it's attacking art itself and making people very reluctant to say how they honestly feel and pursue their art. I'm going to listen to Lana Del Rey a little bit more than I have before now, after you've pointed her out.
Well, Andy, as well as Lana Del Rey, has anybody stood out for you, or is there anybody you'd like to give a shout out to that you think we should be paying a little more attention to as we approach the end of the lockdown?
Yeah, just one person, and I have no idea what he or she is called, but it's the person who's in charge of tourism at Barnard Castle, because they cannot believe their luck, can they? I mean, flipping it, what a result. When we're out of lockdown, you're going to have coach loads of tourists going to, you know, Fountains Abbey, then they're going to go up to York, and then they're all going to go to Barnard Castle. And they'll be, they're going, this is where Dominic Cummings sat, and this is where his, you know, little boy had a pee, and you know, this is the distance between the person who said hello to them, and it's just going to be, in fact, I bet this weekend that place is going to be rammed, isn't it? It's going to be, everyone's going to go there. I would if I live nearby. I would.
Everybody's going to break social distancing rules to go to Barnard Castle. Did you see somebody who had already put one of those mock blue plaques that English Heritage put up saying Dominic Cummings was seen lurking in these here parts? You know, if nothing else, the public's sense of humour, some members of the public have still got a sense of humour for this. Well, Vanity, thank you so much for joining us for this edition of That's Life. It's been a real pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I've been listening to other editions and have been enjoying them, so it was lovely to be a part of one myself.
We do hope that you take care and that you're out of lockdown and exploring your neighbourhood like a cat as soon as you possibly can.
You can catch Vanity doing Instagram and Facebook live streams during lockdown, and you can follow her on Twitter at Vanity Von Glow. And why not follow Ben and I, not too closely, there are some laws against it, but from a safe distance of 2 metres, or just on Twitter, AndyShaw1 and at Benedict Spence.
That's all from us, but do be sure to join us next time for more high-spirited hot takes from lockdown, if we're still here.
The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.